Welcome to Listen Globally. We have a special treat tonight. Shoro Das Trace, a group of extremely talented, dynamic, and powerful Brazilian instrumentalists, is in town performing at 7:30 tonight at the Grand Stafford Theater in downtown Bryan. You now have time to drive over and hear them. I recommend that you do that. Just get in your car and go to the Grand Stafford Theater in downtown Bryan. You don't want to miss this rare opportunity to hear traditional Brazilian music of quality and played with tremendous energy. The group features three sisters in their 20s from the state of São Paulo in Brazil and their dad. And they were on the show last year, but they didn't play here in Bryan College Station last year. So this is a great opportunity. Go out there, get in your car, and you can listen to this interview in some future time, perhaps. All right. Welcome, Shoro Das Trace, to back once again to Listen Globally.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And, of course, for many in the audience, the first question, I suppose, is what is Shoro? So who wants to start with that? Karina?
Okay, well, Shoro is the first Brazilian music. And it's basically the classical music that went to Brazil, and they mixed it with the drum beats that came with the slaves from Africa, and they made a new Brazilian music from classical and drum beats. It's a very joyful, a very happy kind of music. We also have more sad and romantic tunes too, but as I think that because we are young and we like challenges, we choose the most happy tunes from Shoro repertoire.
So, Karina, you are the oldest.
Yes.
And Leah is the second oldest, and Elisa is the youngest. And so, when did you begin playing music?
We all start to study music with 8 years old, but the band is about 12 years.
Yeah, we've been playing as a group for 12 years old, and we started to play young, as Leah said. But I, for example, started to play the recorder when I was 8, and just took the flute when I was 9. Leah started
with the recorder too, and chose the guitar with 10 years old. And Elisa didn't play recorder.
Yes, I started playing the cavaquinho. That's a Brazilian instrument.
A cousin of ukulele.
And then I just played for 3 months or 4, and then I changed to the mandolin.
And Elisa, you're how old now?
Now I'm 21.
21, okay. And you play lots of instruments, right, nowadays, right?
Yes.
Because you've now recorded a solo piano CD, and you're more well-known for playing the bandolin.
Yes, I consider myself a bandolinista, mandolin player. But as I am too curious, I start to play other instruments. As the clarinet, and I started to play the piano about 5 years ago to compose, and I think I really like all the instruments, and I started to work on all of them, so that's why I play all of them.
She plays the clarinet, the mandolin, banjo, tenor banjo, and the piano, right?
Now, is the Brazilian bandolim the same as the American? I mean, other than its appearance, I mean, I know when you think of a bluegrass band, the neck looks different, right? And the body of the instrument looks different. But other than that, is it exactly the same in terms of the number of strings and how you play it and all that?
Yes, it's the same tuning. This is the same. So if you are an American mandolin player, and you take my mandolin, you'll be able to play the same. But what is different, besides the body of the Brazilian mandolin is more like a Portuguese guitar, the Brazilian mandolin, the notes, they sustain longer. So because of that, we developed in Brazil a different way of playing it. And in Brazil, the mandolin is most instrument to play melodies. And because we have a cavaquinho that plays the chords. So usually the mandolin in Brazil play the melody and you with a very clear sound. And I think
the main difference, I think, is that for bluegrass players like to play chord, and also they like a more dirty sound, if this is a correct word in English for it. So they like the noise of the pick hitting the strings.
It's part of the music.
It's part of the music. And they play like a percussion.
Yes.
In the Brazilian mandolin, it's essentially a melodic. So the Brazilian mandolin, they mixed the Portuguese guitar with the mandolin, and with this they could have longer notes and more different ornaments and different ways of playing a melody.
Okay. Now, Leah plays an instrument that the other day when you were playing it at Hanata's house, there were people who play a six-string guitar, and they were looking at it like, okay, that's a little off, and we don't understand why. So could you want to explain about the...
Yeah, that happens when you see for the first time a seven-string guitar. So it's a regular guitar, and we have a lower string, that is the C. So why we have? So when they start to play guitar and show the music, they start to do a little of bass line. And they thought that the sixth string wasn't enough. So they took the cello and chose the fourth string, that is a C, and put on the guitar. So we have more options to do bass lines, and we have more weight. But basically it's the same guitar with a lower string, and what is more different is the way we play, what we do.
Well, and when you play, doesn't kind of you go back and forth between playing underneath like this running bass line, this very energetic running bass line, and then other times it's more the melody, you're carrying the melody a little, or
no, when we are doing accompaniment for show music, normally we don't play the melody. For some tunes we do a solo, but what we do is the harmony and contrapoints. So we kind of fill the blanks of the music and answer the melody, and we show the way for the soloist players and for the other instruments that are doing the harmony, like cavaquinho or a six-string guitar.
If you like Baroque music, for example, you can compare the work that Leah does on the seven-string guitar with the continuo on Baroque music.
Okay.
She has a guide of the accompaniment, and she has to improvise the bass lines,
I think,
and the chords, how to play which note, which inversion.
Yeah, I think that the expression that guitar players use here is walking bass.
Right.
It's something like that, not exactly the same, but right. It's easily to understand.
Mm-hmm. It's another. So shuda music is very Baroque. There are several melodies happening at the same time. So Leah does the continuo. Elisa and I, we play the solo, the main melody, and improvise counterpoints. And the cavaquinho, who is playing harmony, cavaquinhos makes make a wonderful voice leading. So they build in the chords very beautiful and delicate melodies.
And they are a bridge between harmony and rhythm.
And pandeiro, rhythm. The percussion.
Let me remind our listeners that Choro das Três is playing at the Grand Stafford Theater tonight at 7:30, so you still have time to get over there and maybe not find a seat, but at least be standing in the back. We're expecting a really good turnout tonight. Everything I hear is really good about, there's a buzz. I think there's a real buzz about this concert right now, because, you know, in the middle of July in a college town like Bryan College Station, there's not a lot going on. And then, and then suddenly we have this world-class group of musicians playing a kind of music that has never been played in Bryan College Station except on my radio show.
Wow. Yes.
It's true.
And
thank you, Andy.
Yes.
Which I do want to remind those of you who are listening that I have played there ever since they came on the show last July. It was before the 4th of July last year, because it was on the 4th of July that that I saw you play at Soeli's house. Ever since then, I've been playing their music on a regular basis. So if you like Listen Globally, you've probably heard at least half a dozen songs from one of their two CDs that I've had. And now I have more. Very excited. That I've shared with you. So you know that there's something really special going on here. So again, get in your car, go on over to the Grand Stafford Theater in downtown Bryan to hear Choro das Três. We're recording this on Tuesday night. They won't have to make a really fast appearance over there. do something like on Star Trek or whatever. They are already there, even though I'm speaking yesterday. I don't know. This whole time thing is confusing me at this point. All right. How about how soon after you started playing instruments, though, did you latch on to choro as the style you wanted to play? Now you're the oldest, Karina. So did you get interested in choro and
it was very fast. So I started to play the recorder because I was singing in my school, and I wanted to study music. So I started to play the recorder, and then after 1 year, I had to choose my instrument, my father had several CDs, all kinds of music, classical, rock, jazz, samba, bossa nova, and he had just one CD of choro music by a great musician called Altamiro Carrillo.
Yes,
he was the lord of the flute.
Yes, indeed.
And I was 8 years old when I listened to Altamiro Carrillo for the first time, and I felt in love with that music, and I would put and repeat and repeat and repeat again that little CD, and I wanted to play the flute, that I felt that I needed to play that music. That was what I wanted to do.
Okay.
And I was already playing classical guitar. And because of Corina, we start to go to São Paulo to see this kind of music live, to see concerts. And then I met the 7-string guitar and I felt in love, but took a while to find a teacher because we were very young. So I think I started to play 7-string between 12 and 13 years old.
Now did you have a musical hero in that regard?
Yeah, we have. For 7-string guitar players in Brazil, we have... We call him Dino Sete Cordas. Mm-hmm. Yes, he is the god of guitar because he developed this way of playing guitar. And so if you want to play seven string guitar, you need to listen to him and follow his steps.
Yeah, I have a CD of his that he made with Rafael Rabelo.
Yes, and wonderful actually, before Rafael Rabelo, we have two schools. So, or you play like Dino, or you play like Rafael Rabelo schools that is more
solo
guitar. Solo. He mixes a lot of solo of melodies like and accompaniment. And I follow Dino schools that is bass lines and chords. It's difficult to explain, not playing, you know, but yes. You should go online and check or listen here with Andy.
Okay. And Elisa, so you settled on bandolin because they needed a bandolin player to fit in the
Well, I started on the cavaquinho, as I said, and it took a while to find a teacher that wanted me as a student because I was very young. But I couldn't read, and my father finally found a teacher, and he was a choro player, and we were not even looking for a choro teacher, but it was a coincidence, and he was a wonderful teacher. And he was a mandolin player, but he also knew how to teach cavaquinho. And I played some kids' tunes on the cavaquinho. And he said, someday he said, would you like to try my mandolin? And I tried, and I like it very much. And I even cannot remember how this transition happened. But in some point, my parents, they gave me one mandolin, and I started just to study the practice the mandolin because I loved. And I stopped playing the cavaquinho since then. And I cut the bandolin. But they say that when I was very young.
Yeah, when she was very young. So when I started to play flute, my father bought a pandeiro again because he used to play when he was in high school. He had some friends and they made a little band and they won festivals. So they played samba and bossa nova. When he finished high school, he stopped playing. So when I started to play, my father bought a new pandeiro. And we would play in the weekends just for fun. And Elisa was getting crazy because she wanted to play too. And so the first instrument that Elisa played, and she forgets to mention, was a triangle.
Oh, okay.
That they play like in my own ding 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 ding. And my father made to her. And then one day she was very, very little. She couldn't read and write. So she asked me to write a letter for Santa Claus asking a bandolinho, because she didn't know the correct way of speaking bandolin. She thought it would be bandolinho. So I asked, I wrote to Santa Claus to give her a bandolinho, but mm-hmm. she got a cavaquinho. Santa Claus was a little bit confused.
Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about the music that you play. I don't know. How many songs do you think you play on in a regular series of concerts, like three or four concerts? Do you have a certain number that you play every night and some that you just play every once in a while and bring them out?
Yes, but I don't know how many number.
I don't know how many. We never counted. But we have a big repertoire.
Yes.
Because we play in Rodas de Choro, the jam sessions. And we play for hours and hours.
And so you never
repeat a tune.
You can should repeat. Never repeat a tune in a jam session since you start.
Sure.
So doesn't matter if you played, but if someone else already played this one, you can't repeat.
Yes. So the choro players, they always have a big repertoire, because if you play more tunes, you can play all the tunes that they play in the jam session. If you just play some, you have to wait the one that you know.
Okay. But when you do your own concerts, is it a mix of classic choro compositions, your own compositions, new ones by friends and colleagues that you know?
Yeah, yeah. So I think for a concert about 1 hour and a half, we play around 16 or between 14 and 16 tunes.
And yes, we mix classics of choro music with new compositions. We like to show the past of this music that is still very rich and alive. And I think it's important that we introduce Pixinguinha, Jacó do Bandolim, and other great composers of choro music. I think we can't forget this part. But we also play new compositions. So our two most recent CDs, Boas Novas from last year, and Boca de Goiaba, that we are releasing in this tour this year, we recorded just new choros, never recorded before, compositions. And I think it's important to show that choro remains alive, that choro collects composers all over the place. And it's a wonderful kind of music that had a wonderful past, an amazing present and a brilliant future. Mm-hmm. So many people think that in Brazil that choro is a traditional. They make a link of this word tradition with old guys. So they always told us choro, this is music for old guys. You shouldn't be playing choro. You should play modern. But no, I think that good music is ageless. So if you see Chopin, Beethoven, Mozart, Bach, all old composers that people still love to listen in all over the world, because the good music is immortal.
But I guess the difference would be that in classical music, I mean, say, you know, you could be a performer and you might only play Chopin or other composers from the 19th century. But in choro, but then people who actually compose classical music, if we want to use that word, they don't try and write compositions in the style of Chopin anymore. While new and old choros, to me, usually sound fresh, new choro sound fresh, but they still sound traditional. Is that that makes sense?
Yes,
because
yes.
We try to compose in the same style, I think.
But there I think that depends of the tune. So if you take this last CD that we made, there is a choro called that I composed with Elisa, Cacique, the chief of the natives. And it's a choro, but it's very modern, we can say that. And in the same time, we can take a baião that we composed together, and it's more traditional. It depends the melody and how we feel the tune should be, but we don't think about
making something new.
To make these sounds like Pixinguinha or Jacó. Yes. It's just because we play this music, and when we compose, it's what comes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Elisa has done most of the composing, but the others of you are...
Yeah, but Elisa is who composed more.
Okay. Yes. She's... We also compose together sometimes.
Well, and that was something I wanted to ask about. I guess not so much the compositions, but the arrangements. Do you have to when you have a new composition, or when you're doing an old composition but you haven't played it before as Choro das Três, do you spend a long time saying, well, okay, you, at this point you need to do this, or is it, or is it just all flow out of what the style of the style?
No, both.
Usually
both. We, when we take a old shuru, what we think is that we don't want to do something just to be new. So we don't change an arrangement just because we need a new arrangement. We try to make it better. Mm-hmm. So I think that a problem nowadays is that in many situations people want to do something new just because making new thing is what they want to do, but they don't mind if it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And we try to when we take an old shuru, we try to give our interpretation, flavor, yeah, so. Our flavor, but we also try, we do this because we think, oh, I think this would sound better if we do like this. And for the new compositions, we play several times and then we start to work on breaks, then we say breaks. Stops, breaks. Mm-hmm. And harmony, solos, and in this new CD Boca de Goiaba, I made an arrangement for mini frevo orchestra, so trombones, trumpets, saxophone, and another one has accordion. In the other CD, I wrote to cello. So we say, oh, this tune, it's so melodious. It has, it should, there's an instrument that would fit very well. Well, the cello. Let's try to make a line for cello. So we're never concerned about just doing something new. We search a sound that we search. Our search is to find a sound that we all like.
Well, it always sounds to me very fresh and energetic and dynamic, and I love the interplay between you all.
Thank
the
you.
Way I mean, there's and as I said, I already use the word energy, but I'll say it again. There's so much energy when you guys play your. And I'm not saying that if when you get old you won't have this energy, right? You have a tremendous amount of energy.
But
I also was struck the other day, and this was something I said in the note, that when Hinata or when you guys were playing the Jobim song the other day, that you hadn't played it together before, and yet as you were playing it, I could see the arrangement developing. It was becoming. Yes. It was
but
becoming.
That's how we do. Usually, Leah and I we start first, learn the tunes and play, and then my father comes and then Corina. But it's exactly what happens, and we play maybe
over and over again. And what if I did this?
And each time you put something,
you change.
Well, do you have to practice alone anymore, or do you just practice as a group? Do you still practice your own instruments separately, or is that?
Yes.
We never practice like 8 hours per day. I'll sit now and study 8 hours. No. We always play during the day, but something more free. I mean, I feel I need to study
to work
or do
on
something
this piece
or
and
working
you just
on this
sit
piece.
And work on this piece, and then you, when you finish to work your part, I call Leah, can you play with me? And then we play together.
And people think sometimes that working with music, it's all about sitting and practicing. But there are many other things that a musician needs to do. So yes, we spend many hours practicing, but we have to write the music we compose. We need to write the arrangements. I do audio engineering on our CDs. Leah does the video editing. So there are many other works related to a musician's career too.
A question I was curious about, because I was trying to think of Brazilian musicians, Brazilian women musicians, and most of the musicians, the people I was coming up with in the history of Brazilian music, with very few exceptions, were all singers, right?
Yes. I mean,
sometimes, yeah. Sometimes songwriters, some occasional composer, but instrumentalists, I wasn't coming up with them. And I was wondering, and when I think of Choro, also I think of it as kind of, when you said old guys earlier, yeah, but the accent I would put in comparison to you is not only that you're not old, but also you're not guys. So being women musicians, do people in Brazil who are Choro musicians are like, well, they're young people and they're women. I mean, is that much of the dynamic in Brazil or not?
It's funny, the musicians, they accept it as very well. So when we arrived, we were very little. For many of them, we were like their granddaughters. Mm-hmm. So they would be very kind with us. And a beautiful thing about Choro music, there is a researcher that say that when the musicians, the Choro musicians, they were together in a roda for the first time, that was the first time that there wasn't any prejudice at all. The important thing is, can you play well? So when we got to the first rodas de Choro in São Paulo, they were very kind, and they always said to us, you can't call me Mr. or Sir Galani, because in music we are the same, but they also expected us to play in the same level. So we had to study and practice a lot.
And this is funny because sometimes a lady or a girl would come to play and they were not that good, but they would say to them, oh, it's great. And if we play something wrong, we say, no, you're playing all wrong, because they know that it's like that we were not girls playing with them. It's like we were the same. So,
and their standards were the same, no matter.
Yes, and for the other girls, they would say, good, very good.
Go back, stud, and take a time to return. And it's funny because the only people that had made comments for us, like that were not nice when we came, were like sound engineers in concerts that they thought
before the concert
women, and they went to say to me, what should I do in my mixing? What women know about this? So, and after the concert, they would come to apologize. So,
you play like a man.
Yeah. Yes, once we made a concert, and after the concert, someone wrote on the newspaper of the city, they play like a man. And we didn't know if it was a compliment or what.
But I think that happens with popular music, sure, with any kind, even in Brazil or here. And we normally see more women playing classical music
than popular.
That's true. So do you want to say something about the role of your father in the group?
Yeah. About daddy? Oh, papai, Eduardo, our daddy, he was very important because he is very important. But I mean, in the beginning of our musical education, he called me one day and said, okay, Corina, here is the thing. We don't need to be a professional flute player. You can play just for fun. I love to play for fun. I played for fun with my friends.
As a hobby,
but doesn't matter your choice. You need to play well. Everything that you do in your life needs to be well done. So if you are gonna play flute, take your flute, practice it, practice the flute, and when you come to play with me, you'll be able to play one tune from top to bottom. There is nothing worse than someone that wants to play something and stop.
Oh, sorry.
Ding, 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 ding. Oh, sorry.
He
said, no, if you are gonna play, you need to play right. And you don't need to be a professional. So I'm very grateful for that, because with this advice, this advice changed our lives and everything that we do. We try to do our best to do the most well done as possible. And it was wonderful. We had a wonderful time together in youth. My father would drive every Saturday for 10 years. He drove every Saturday 1 hour and a half to arrive in São Paulo. And we would arrive there at 9 a.m. and play with the musicians all day long. And he would come back driving to Porto Feliz at 2 or 3 a.m. after playing all day.
1 hour
and a half. We have the concept in the United States of a soccer mom, the mom who takes the...
Yes.
And so this is the Shoru dad.
Yeah. My mom would come together. She was and my mom was very important too, because we made... Conservatory of Music in Tatuí, which is the biggest in Latin America, and she had an old Russian car, a Jeep, an old Russian Jeep, and she would drive 3-4 times a week to take me to this conservatory, and they had many classes, and she would sit.
Wait.
And she hates to make all the knitting.
She doesn't like,
but she tried everything
to pass the time. Okay.
Yeah, and I would go. I would leave the conservatory like sometimes at 10 when it was closing. I arrive at noon and leave at 10 in the night. So it was a very hard work that my parents had.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your tour of the United States. Now, my understanding is this is your third time in the United States?
Yeah, but this is the second big tour we do here.
And so last year you did 30 concerts or so?
Yeah, something 30 concerts and workshops. And this year we are over 40, and this tour is bigger. Last year we stayed here for 2 months. This year the whole tour is about 3 months.
And I was saying to my wife earlier today that you guys have seen more of the United States than many U.S. citizens I know, because you start in do you usually start in Massachusetts? Was that the very first you played?
Yeah,
Massachusetts.
We arrived in New York. And our friend David Eisenberg met us. He came to the airport with our car. We have Shurumobile, a very brave car. And Shurumobile came to New York with David, and we drove to Massachusetts, where he lives. He has a wonderful house in the Cape Cod. And the Shurumobile stays there all the year, waiting for us.
Okay.
And then
I was wondering, because I thought, okay, surely they didn't paint Shurumobile on the back of a rental car. I thought that couldn't be.
we would paint it.
You can wash it. Yeah. And the first year, last year that we painted, we forgot to clean before leaving. And David had a terrible time to find out how to wash and clean the windows. So, well, we start in Cape Cod every year. And so we made our first concert there, and then we go to Boston area, Rhode Island, Maine, Portland, Maine, and we crossed all the way by car to Chicago. And then we went to Boulder, Colorado, and then we drove through the Grand Tetons and Yellowstone all on the way to Spokane, Washington. Ellensburg, Seattle, Port Townsend, and then Portland, Oregon,
Salem,
Eugene, Oregon, then California, Oakland, San Diego, and now we are
Austin.
Now you played in Austin last time, but I was glad that you added our fair city to your tour this year, and then you're going to go on to Tennessee and North Carolina.
We'll be in Tennessee,
in Memphis area,
and we'll be Chattanooga, North Carolina, Washington D.C., New York, Pennsylvania. Connecticut, Massachusetts again.
Well, what amazes me about the list is that it's all these different kinds of towns. Because when you told me the other day where you're going to play in North Carolina, I lived in North Carolina for about 8 years, and I had no clue what you were talking about. So I looked it up. Okay, Aberdeen. Well, it makes sense that a lot of Scottish people settled in North Carolina. It makes sense that there was a town called Aberdeen, but I didn't know Aberdeen. But it's a small... It's a small town, and you're playing in some. You've got some college towns on the list. On the other hand, you're playing in New York City. So you've seen a lot of the United States.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, most Brazilians, for example, when they come to the States, they go to Orlando,
and Miami,
or New York,
to shop.
So that's about it. So you guys are having a very rich experience, and the audience and the. I'm curious too about how you get the concerts together, because are these people who know people who heard you in Brazil and then became you were in communication?
All kinds of people.
So this
all
is the hard work of a musician that we need to do. So like almost 1 year before I start to plan this with our friend David. And so, yes, many people that know other people who heard about us and say, oh, I have a friend. They are Brazilians. They are coming. And I know that you have concerts, blah, blah, blah.
Or people that saw us last year.
People that saw.
Oh, no,
there's a very
through
interesting
internet.
Story about when we were, like, more than 10 years ago, we played in a very famous TV
show
in Brazil.
David Letterman.
It's a Brazilian version of David Letterman.
Uh-huh.
And so we played in this TV show, and a guy that lives here, a Brazilian that lives here in Chicago called Geraldo, he saw this show and he was amazed. And he sent emails to us and said, oh, I want to bring you to the U.S. You would be... you would play a lot of concerts here. People would love you guys. And unfortunately, it was expensive to come. We didn't know how to do this. Elisa was... all of us were under 18, which is the...
Majority?
Major age.
Yeah. Legal. So we say you're legal.
Yeah,
we were
children, and my parents just said, oh, it won't work. So after 10 years, I was organizing my tour last year, And my friend called a friend that called Geraldo and said, oh, I know that you organize, you promote concerts in Chicago, and there is this Brazilian choro group that's touring in the US and they will be driving through Chicago. Do you think you could set up a concert for them? And he said, well, yes, but who is this group? And it was Choro das Três. So the guy, Geraldo, was very happy. And so when we arrived and we met him, he said, oh my gosh, I think I will cry. 10 years ago, I wanted to meet you. And just now it worked. So there, it's very, very nice.
Well, and I'm very curious. I'd love to be in the head of some member of your audience sometimes, because I'm sure that a lot of people come to your shows having no idea what they're going to hear.
Yes.
And then after the first song, they're probably just totally captivated, but it probably wasn't something they were exactly expecting, because most people in the United States, when they think of Brazilian music, it's bossa nova and that's about it, right? On the other hand, and so the instruments are going to be different. I mean, there are just all sorts of ways in which choro can connect. I was saying this to the reporter from the Eagle, that can, you know, bluegrass players can like it because there's picking, you know, and jazz people can like it because of not. I didn't actually say that they were jazz rhythms. That's what was in the article, but in any case, the rhythm would appeal to a jazz person, as would be the way the flute, the flute would more connect to jazz people than perhaps the strings in that way. And then, you know, anyway. So, anyway, I would love, you know, I don't remember, in a certain sense, when I heard this music for the first time, but I would love to have the experience of hearing you guys for the very first time, not knowing what to expect, because I mean, you guys are so exciting and wonderful.
Thank you.
And I'm so grateful that I've gotten to know you a little bit. We're going to finish this off here and let you guys relax before your concert tomorrow night. And again, if there's anyone out there who hasn't heard, by this time tomorrow night, or by this time tonight, they will be playing already, but you can still go hear an hour of their music or something like that. Do you have any last words before we say goodbye and say thanks for coming by to KUS?
Well, I'd love to send a special thanks to all the friends and musicians that have been supporting our tour. This tour is just possible because of these people, and also because of the wonderful audience that have been coming to our concerts and supporting our tour here. So special thanks to you. Thank you for receiving us and promoting this music that we love so much.
Okay. Thank you for appearing on Listen Globally.